And we continue at 106 in the afternoon. Talk Radio 790 KABC, the John Phillips Show, broadcasting live in exile from the Morongo Casino Resort and Spa Living Room Studios. And it's time to fully reopen the state of California for business. Mr. Randy Wang's at the sports desk in Culver City.
John, it's a tale of two very different West Side elections. In the LA County Board of Supervisors race, Lindsay Horvath has been declared the winner. She currently has a 5-point lead over Bob Hertzberg, and he has conceded to her. But also in the West Side, in LA City Council District 11, Tracy Park has won over Erin Darling with a 5-point lead.
Okay, so Erin Darling, Erin with an E, not Erin with an A, because Erin with an E goes, not. He was the Mike Bonham candidate, correct?
Yeah. If you ever saw him on a TV interview, he looked like a guy that was way too tan to be wearing a suit, and it seemed suspicious.
A little Charlie Crist action?
A little like you slapped a suit onto somebody that lives in a tent.
Well, I don't think he's taking the loss well, because someone texted me earlier this morning, friend of the show, actually. It was a private text, so I won't give out the person's name. But apparently, he deleted his Twitter account.
Oh, yes, he did.
What was that about?
Well, I think he still has his personal one, but he had a campaign one.
Was he upset that people were trolling him, or was this some sort of protest that Elon Musk bought the company?
Well, there were a lot of people last night who thought Twitter was going out of business, so maybe that's what that was. But if I look him up now, I can see his account, and he does have his concession paragraph on there. While the margins have been tightening as we've been monitoring the votes, my team and I no longer see a path to victory. Buddy, there hasn't been a path to victory since the beginning.
Mike Bonin, I bet you, thought that he was going to be the Wizard of Oz with this new council.
Well, everyone else that he endorsed won, and won in huge numbers, except in the district that he has represented since 2013 that tried to recall him.
Oh, if that recall had qualified for the ballot, he'd be parking cars at the DoubleTree by the airport.
Well, this is what's interesting. The recall did not qualify by a hair. Bonin decided to not seek office, but the result of the recall, if it had happened, would have been Tracy Park.
That's right. So I guess they ended up with Tracy Park one way or another.
So while countywide, that district is going to be even worse than Sheila Kuehl, citywide in Los Angeles, there will be a complete repudiation of Mike Bonin's era when it comes to Venice and the Palisades.
800-222-KABC is the telephone number. It is my pleasure to welcome our next guest to the program. He is a Republican strategist who you can follow on Twitter at TheThomasGuide. You can also get him online at tpstrat.com, and he has a brand new super PAC that just came out. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. John Thomas, welcome to the show.
Hey, John. Good to be with you.
So there is so many election results here in Southern California. We have a new mayor. We have a new sheriff. We have a new county supervisor. And if you are someone who is, how should I put this, Randy, mindful of law enforcement and public safety, you're not going to be very happy with the results.
Did any of those? That is something we are mindful of.
Thank you very much, Governor. Were any of those results that surprised you?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, there were a couple races that were somewhat surprising, you know, particularly the Bob Hertzberg kind of end of the Hertzberg dynasty was surprising. That should have been a race that he won. There was a surprising race, John, in the LA City Attorney's race, you know, that early on it looked like Fossil Gill, kind of the more leftist of the field, looked to be the front runner. And then in the runoff, kind of the lesser of two lefties did win. But look, John, it's undeniable the leftward shift that LA City has taken, both at the law enforcement level as well as, you know, at the council level. I mean, just when you thought they couldn't go any further left, they have. And so at this point, John, you just have a hard time having sympathy for the people of Los Angeles when they suffer under the policies that they continually vote in.
one of the reasons that these socialist candidates were able to win is that socialists are very organized. They're out on the streets. They're protesting. They're with the unions. There is an organization that exists. And when you send everyone an absentee ballot, the Democratic Party is no longer the only organization that's doing things like harvesting ballots. So are the socialists. And the socialists, the DSA, the Democratic Socialists of America, were able to knock off longtime Democratic incumbents in any number of races. When the Democrats created these rules and put these voting rules on the books, they anticipated that these rules would help them defeat Republicans. I'm sure they never imagined that these rules would be used by socialists to defeat Democrats. Given the fact that they're now starting to drop like flies, but they still control power in Sacramento, do you think the Democrats are going to start sounding the alarm bells and saying, wait a minute, if we don't do something about these idiotic voting rules, not only are the socialists going to win in L.A. city government, they're going to be coming after us in Sacramento next, and God forbid we're not going to allow that to happen?
I don't think you're going to see that at the statewide, certainly, you know, statewide races, John, simply because organizing statewide is so incredibly difficult. It really only works well when you're incredibly well funded. So there still is an advantage, even with these rules, to union, Soros-backed group, those kind of things. And I just don't see it. There's been such a leftward shift in terms of how we run our elections in blue states for some time. I'm not hearing of anything changing here, John. I think, look, this is just a reality, particularly in L.A. City and L.A. County, that they're going to have to live with. And, John, I think the next seat that the socialists and leftists are going after is going to be Kevin De Leon's seat. Not necessarily sure in a recall, but certainly when he's up for reelect, I think that they're going to capture that seat, and that will have dramatic consequences for budget allocations of downtown L.A.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
Former Navy SEAL Sean Ryan shares real stories from real people from all walks of life on The Sean Ryan Show. Comedian John Crist.
How long have you been in Nashville? Let's see, 2018 is when I moved here. I lived in an apartment. I didn't know anything about it. I lived in L.A.
You were living in L.A.? How was that?
Yeah. Well, let's see. Good for my career. Send me to rehab, though. So I mean, that's pretty much the sum of it.
The Sean Ryan Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Given that prediction, Randy, what do you say we listen to the Pledge of Allegiance?
Why, yes, it is time, because Kevin De Leon still has not resigned.
Madam President, today is Tuesday and time for the flag salute.
Mr. De Leon, can you please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance this morning?
Thank you very much, Madam President. It would be an honor. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. Undivisible, pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. For which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
John, did that rendition give you goosebumps too?
I'd rather listen to that than his racist tropes in behind closed door meetings.
What went wrong for Rick Caruso? I thought when this campaign started, it was so promising that he would be able to have the resources, have the money to get his message out there. It's a city that has a skyrocketing crime rate, skyrocketing homeless numbers, ethical problems at City Hall. He was the perfect answer to all of our problems. The public knew he was on the ballot. He spent enough money on the advertising to let them know that he was on the ballot, and they still chose the same old, same old.
Oh, gosh, Sean, where do I begin? I think there were several major missteps here, both strategically and tactically. I'll just buzz through really quickly. First of all, and most broadly, I think on the narrative level, John, his messaging, the ads just kind of sucked. It's not that they weren't ubiquitous, and it's not that he wasn't banging the right issue set in terms of homelessness and crime and all that. I think that was fine. But I don't think he, in L.A. City, particularly when you're a rich white billionaire, former Republican, you have to tether your bio to an emotional connection using the ads. I thought the ads were fairly kind of stale and just banging the top issue set over and over. So that's, I think, the biggest problem. The second is, John, I think he made a strategic blunder in not ripping Karen's face off in the primary and trying to go for 50% plus one outright. And even coming up short, he would have kept her in a distant second, essentially not allowing her to have any boost of momentum going into the summer, as well as rejuvenating her donors and encouraging all these national Dem heavyweights, making it easy for them to join Karen's campaign. And then the last thing, John, is Rick's greatest strength was his financial prowess and the fact that he could control the media, the narrative. He went dark, John, right after primary election day. He went dark the entire summer. You know, he should have aired, I would argue, a 60-second spot for 2 weeks the day after election day, completely resetting the narrative and thanking the people for their trust and support and resetting what this is all about, and then kick the living snot out of Karen all summer long when she would be forced to be silent because she didn't have the money to compete. But instead, John, what did he do? I think he went on his yacht to Italy and then finally emerged in the last few weeks with a barrage of ads that were just too little too late.
We're speaking with Republican campaign strategist John Thomas, who you can follow on Twitter at TheThomasGuide. What went wrong for incumbent Sheriff Alex Villanueva?
Oh, my gosh. quite a bit. I mean, I think a lot of the problems he had were really self-wrought. I think I've seen this many times, John, with candidates that are under attack, whether rightly or wrongly, where they end up retreating to their safe space. In this case, Alex Villanueva's safe space was Sean Hannity, and it wasn't making the case to voters. You know, his consulting team was not seasoned pros, from what I understand, John. His real political advisors were deputies within the office, which, you know, maybe they know how to run law enforcement organizations, but they certainly don't understand political campaigning. And then Alex kind of went on a griping tour, blaming everybody, picking fights necessarily didn't have to have. I think the big opportunity missed in that race, John, was that the sheriff could have taken his problems and perceived controversy and basically positioned the race of a choice between public safety, law and order, and George Gascon. He should have picked a fight with Gascon and said that he's the last stand for the people of L.A. County between keeping their family safe and lawlessness that George Gascon provides. And I think he could have piggybacked on Gascon's unfavorable rates of about 70% in L.A. County, which I think voters would have made that choice in the sheriff's favor. But he never it was all very inside baseball. The thing that struck me the most, John, I think I shared with you and we were chatting a few weeks back, that the debate was illuminating for me between the sheriff and Luna. In the sense of the sheriff just was making all these inside baseball attacks that were completely lost, I think, on the broader electorate. You got to stick to the big picture stuff and the big message frame, and I don't think he did that.
Running against Gascon is such a good idea, and not only should the sheriff have done that, but any number of other candidates should have done that, and I think it would have probably been easier for them to do that had the recall qualified for the ballot. Certainly in Orange County in the primary, that's exactly what the incumbent DA Todd Spitzer did, and he didn't even have to go into a runoff. He won clean in the primary.
Yeah, I mean, I'm proud to be in part the architect of that of that message sequence for District Attorney Spitzer, and it worked like a champ, John. You're 100% right. Voters, you know, in these kind of races, they need stark contrasts and where the decision is super easy. When it gets nuanced and granular and inside baseball and who's right and who's wrong, Anything can happen, and it usually doesn't bode well for the incumbent when voters are unhappy or uneasy. But that was the way to go. I think that was the way to go in the LA city attorney's race for some of the candidates in the primary. That was what Villanueva should have done. John, I think Rick Caruso, even though he had a bit of a complicated pass with Gascon, I think he should have seen when he saw the light, he should have made his race about George Gascon.
And Nathan Hochman running for attorney general should have too.
100%. 100%.
One of the subjects that you spent a lot of time on this cycle are school board races. School boards are very influential in determining what kind of instruction your kids get when they're in schools and public schools here in California and beyond. We certainly saw in the state of Florida, Ron DeSantis play a very active role in those races. What were the results? Because they typically don't end up on the front fold of the newspaper or the lead story of the nightly news, but they're still very important. What happened in so many of those races locally?
You know, I think we saw pretty good outcomes. It varied a little bit. The ones I was involved with, I believe we won almost all of them. In that kind of race, look, momentum really was, the wind was at our sails, but behind us. But the challenges, John, the teachers union and the Democratic machines, you know, are just this perennial force in California races, particularly at the school board level, because they see it, they see parents that are not beholden to them as existential threats, and they spend money in these school board races. The races where parents that were not beholden to the unions that ran good races, organized and sent out voter communication, almost all of them got across the finish line because voters kind of got the contrast of what happened in the lockdowns with the teachers unions. The teachers unions are not on the sides of kids. We saw that contrast, and voters got it when they were reminded of that choice. In instances when they weren't, they were easily tricked by teachers unions. And oftentimes, John, it wasn't even in a debate about whether the teachers are better or parents are better. It was really more broad partisan things, such as Ted Lieu, a member, was advertising for his choice of kind of union school board members, and it was really about just saying so and so is the good Democrat in the race, and that's the only conversation that voters were exposed to. If that was all, oftentimes the choice of the unions and Ted Lieu and whatnot were winning. If
former Navy SEAL Sean Ryan shares real stories from real people from all walks of life on The Sean Ryan Show. Comedian John Crist.
How long have you been in Nashville? Let's see, 2018 is when I moved here. I lived in an apartment. I didn't know anything about it. I lived in L.A.
You were living in L.A.? How was that?
Yeah. Well, let's see. Good for my career. Send me to rehab, though. So I mean, that's pretty much the sum of it.
The Sean Ryan Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
If the broader narrative happened, we won almost every time.
You have a brand new super PAC that was just made public that is pushing Florida Governor Ron DeSantis to run for president. Can you talk to us about that?
Sure. I'm excited to be a part of this effort. After we were promised, and Republicans were promised, John, on Tuesday, we were promised a wave. At best, we got a red mist. And yet you look at Florida, and Ron DeSantis created his own red tsunami, not just for himself, but he brought our entire team of Republican candidates with him, turning what was a classic swing state into now a ruby red state. And the contrast between what happened in Florida and nationally was so stark. People from all over the country were reaching out to me immediately saying, we need Governor DeSantis to be the presidential nominee for the Republican Party in 2024. Now, the catch is Governor DeSantis hasn't announced, and it's not in his interest to announce for, could be 6 months or a year. Yet we knew that former President Trump was going to be announcing very shortly. So I, along with a bunch of donors and grassroots activists across the country, as well as party chairs, got together and formed the first major super PAC to support Ron DeSantis for president, called Ron to the Rescue. We launched in full steam over the weekend. We released our first 60-second spot, I believe it was about 48 hours ago. We're going up in Iowa and next week. We're going to be, our goal is within 2 to 3 weeks to be in every single swing state, reminding voters that they have a choice in Ron DeSantis. And while, John, what's so interesting is I thought the earth was moving underneath our feet in terms of the Republican electorate was willing to look for the future of the party and somebody like Ron DeSantis. Well, actually, a bunch of public polling has come out since Election Day, and we were right. But no, we didn't understand how quickly the earth shook, John. If you look at almost every single public polling in a head-to-head stack up in all the key battleground states, Ron DeSantis is defeating Donald Trump by double digits at this point. It's really been quite amazing.
If people want to see the ad, how can they do that?
Well, they can go rontotherescue.com. That's Ron, the number two, therescue.com. And we're right there on the homepage.
John Thomas, Republican strategist extraordinaire. You can follow him on Twitter at TheThomasGuide and get him online at tpstrat.com. John Thomas, thanks so much for stopping by.
Great to be with you, John.
If you want to email the show, you can do so at johnnydontlikeshow@gmail.com. That's johnnydontlikeshow@gmail.com. And Randy, I've just received word that Gavin Newsom's very mindful comments are now up at KABC.com.
That's right. If you would like to entertain yourself this weekend by playing Gavin Newsom's mindful montage, you can do it over and over and over again on the website.
Mindful, we are mindful that we are not out of the woods. Always mindful of that. We're mindful of our obligation. Mindful that we're not out of the season. And I'm mindful that we have to be strategic. We're also mindful. We are mindful that we're going to have to be more proactive as a state. We're mindful as well. But I'm also mindful. We're very mindful of the importance of mindfulness.
Now, you know, everyone in the audience is going to use that word nonstop the rest of the day.
Quite frankly, I think you're right.
Boy, I love art. Did you get those pictures I just sent you?
Uh-oh. I am opening up the phone. Oh, boy. I forgot about the Weinstein one. I mean, I alluded to what's down there, but I didn't expect to see it in person.
The lovely Rita from Sunland is a very accomplished artist and sent us her artist rendition of all of the descriptions in court that we've heard of Harvey Weinstein. She has a painting that's actually, I think, worthy of hanging on one of the walls in my house.
And I don't want to be too descriptive because this is radio. This is a family show, for Christ's sakes. But all I can say is that if you saw this picture of what Harvey Weinstein looks like without any clothes on, there's no way anything has ever been consensual.
Did you see the one she did of the fake doctor?
That is a beauty right there. That is a work of art. Although this rendition of the fake doctor has a little more color in her face than I've usually seen.
That's very true.
Next slide.
All right. The warden had his press conference where he was very mindful. And Randy, we left off last hour by playing what the warden had to say about the budget deficit, but he kept going.
Did we finish that one? Oh, we did not finish it. Let's keep going.
Familiar dealing with times of abundance as well as scarcity. Former mayor, as a governor, that's dealt with deficits and surpluses. We'll continue to balance those priorities and continue to make the appropriate investments. As I've stated all along, those investments are pretty clear in terms of addressing the top issues in the
state. There's no deficit to see here. We're going to be fine.
No, stop asking me about that. Ask me about the abortion policy of the state of Alabama.
He did get asked about it again, though.
The LAO's projection, and I know the Department of Finance has said their projection's also pretty similar, it doesn't assume that we're in a recession. But your administration, as you said, saw this shortfall coming 6 months ago. Economically, everything is kind of in the recipe to create a recession. I'm just wondering.
Ashley Zavala just did a rhyme.
Economically, everything is kind of in the recipe to.
I can't help myself.
Economically, everything is kind of in the recipe to create a recession. I'm just wondering if you are prepared for one, or if those discussions are even happening right now.
Oh, yeah. No, they've, they were happening. You can go back to my budget speeches last year. You can go back to the May revise where I said that we're taking the increment of the May revise surplus and 99 cents of the dollar we're investing in one-time purposes, not ongoing. I remember saying that, and even my staff said it can't be 99%. We had to even put up a slide because no one believed it.
In fact, when he said that, this woman got furious because she thought she was getting a raise.
We demand higher pay.
Oh, she's definitely not going to like that.
99 cents of every dollar. That had never been done, or at least promoted in the past, because of that concern. It's a way of expressing, yes, this has been a concern for some time. It's not my first rodeo. We've all been through this. We've all seen this movie.
You know, I don't even know if you can use that cliche in California. They're talking about banning rodeos. You can't say this ain't my first rodeo anymore.
Well, it has to be outside the city limits.
This has been a concern for some time. It's not my first rodeo. We've all been through this.
Thanks, Koretz.
We've all seen this movie. The volatility, the good days, the bad days. We had a $75 billion surplus 2 years ago, $101.14 this last year. We have a modest
projection. Whoa, how fast does he go through those numbers?
The volatility, the good days, the bad days. We had a $75 billion surplus 2 years ago, $101.14.
Yeah, sometimes in the middle of a press conference, he'll sound like a coked-up accountant from the 80s.
I love it when people go through numbers so fast, especially when they're trying to give you a telephone number, because the cadence, the beat for every telephone number is the same thing. Bum, 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 bum. Right?
That's how we do it.
First three numbers, you take a pause, then you have two numbers, you take a pause, then you have two numbers. But you run through seven numbers real fast, no one has any idea what you just said.
The volatility, the good days, the bad days. We had a $75 billion surplus 2 years ago, $101.14 this last year. We have a modest projection.
Can we take that clip and speed it up to make him go even faster through the numbers?
I think we can here. How fast do you want him to go? Do you want him to go at 150%, 125%, 200%? What do you feel like?
Well, here's what I want you to do. I want you to pick the number, but I want it to be Gavin Newsom in the late 1980s, coked out of his mind going through the numbers.
All right, let's see if we get that with a 75% speed up.
The volatility.
Oh, that's the wrong way around. No, that's if he's on drowsy pills. Sometimes I forget how to use this thing. Let's try 150. Here we go. We're going from 8 seconds to 5 seconds. It's in the system, locked in. Here we go.
The volatility, the good days, the bad days. We had a $75 billion surplus 2 years ago, $101.14 this last year. We have a modest projected surf.
Sounds like the guy that does afternoons here.
The volatility, the good days, the bad days. We had a $75 billion surplus 2 years ago, $101.14 this last year. We have a modest projected surplus.
All right, let's go ahead and take a quick break. We'll take a look at the roads.
Someone's got the giggles.
I can't stop looking at those drawings.
Take a look at that. Take a look at Jennifer Newsom. There's no way that was consensual.
No. All right, let's go back to Gavin.
Let's go back to Gavin on the budget shortfall.
Deficit's big numbers, but it's the fourth largest economy in the world. And that's why we batten down the hatches. We put a lot of supplemental payments to pay down pension obligations, to supplement our reserves. We could pull those back a little bit and provide some flexibility. As I said, 72.
Wait, we're going to save $24 billion by not paying down our pension liability.
Boy, he's just talking in circles, isn't he?
That is the literal definition of robbing Peter to pay Paul. Well, you know how we're going to solve this budget shortfall? By not paying our obligations.
It's the state of California way.
We could pull those back a little bit and provide some flexibility. As I said, $72 billion plus of broad strokes resiliency that we put in the budget. And so
there's another Gavin term that makes no sense.
A broad strokes resiliency.
Broad strokes.
Oh, my God. If I could find a way to put the throw up emoji over the radio, I would have just done that.
A broad strokes resiliency that we put in the budget. And so we're preparing for a lot of different scenarios, and we're also preparing for this. I don't expect to, you know, back to Tom, your question, which I intentionally skated a little bit, and I appreciate you didn't do a follow-up around Speaker McCarthy. I don't expect a lot of support coming from the Republican caucus past his prologue. So we're going to have to be creative and you know, I'm not saying we're on our own. We're a net donor. Thank you. A lot of those red states out there, you're welcome.
He is so passive aggressive.
Net donor, of course, is the term that the taxes that California goes to the federal government outweigh the taxes that some of these very, very little populated states put in. And they get more than they get more from the feds than we do, according to Gavin.
Right. Well, you know, the state that gets the most is Alaska.
If they get polar bears to pay taxes, we'd be good to go.
We're very mindful.
That is a full-on reset button.
It's just a crutch. It's just when he has nothing to say, that's what comes out of his mouth.
We're very mindful of the headwinds in front of us globally and obviously as it relates to the trend lines in the nation.
He has become a parody of himself. If he runs for president, he's not going to have a press corps that covers for him. He's not going to have a press corps that ignores a lot of this stuff. Maybe even the late night host would have to make fun of him over this.
Yeah, they haven't really dialed in on him yet. Once you start to see the idiosyncrasies of Gavin Newsom, it's hard to never pay attention to them.
It's literally the only thing I can hear now.
He is a strange, strange speaker. And when you're a politician on the national stage, that's your job, speaking.
Randy is monitoring the mailbag over at johnnydontlikeshow@gmail.com. Randy, what do you see?
Well, we're getting a lot of reaction to what people are now calling Motormouth Gavin Newsom.
The volatility, the good days, the bad days. We had a $75 billion surplus 2 years ago, $101.14 this last year. We have a modest projected surplus.
Mark says, I'd just like to jam something in his mouth. I still maintain his wife will Carol Baskin him. Who's going to complain?
And that's the one that we can read on the air.
Yeah. The other one, I don't want to have to have a meeting after this show, so I won't read the other email.
It's a Friday. You want to start your weekend as soon as possible.
Exactly.
All right, we've got one more hour coming up. Katie Hopkins joins us from across the pond coming up in moments. Don't you go anywhere. This is Talk Radio 790 KABC.
I mean, this is the dumbest stuff I've ever heard. We're as dumb as we want to be.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.